Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, it's good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing very well. There's a little bit of news about the Middle East.
Yeah.
Dealing with Israel right now. And it's gotten a little bit of attention. But there's been a problem in the Middle East for a long time. And they had a peace treaty and tried to settle things between Israel and Gaza. Had a temporary ceasefire from the things going on. But it all fell apart this weekend. And there was violations and accusing of each other. But it looks like Netanyahu had to step back and say, hey, we need another ceasefire, even though they had a lot to do with the breakdown, you know, of this previous ceasefire. But Egypt has helped. They stepped in and said they would, you know, help out and bring in the parties together again. And it looked like Netanyahu was glad to have their help. It looks like he's not interested. So there's a few things that you can gather from this. The first thing that the antagonisms are going to continue. I mean, these peace treaties, ceasefires don't seem to work, so that's just old news. But maybe there's a different ability for the Palestinians, Hamas, you know, to be able to fight back. And this is the reason I think that that they called for another ceasefire. But Lieberman, their defense minister, it's very interesting, he resigned over it. You know, we've always thought the Israeli government is pretty aggressive and tough. But Lieberman said, no way, I'm getting out of here, you bunch of wimps. And so he's gotten out of there. And that means that I think Netanyahu is most likely to dissolve the Knesset and have elections, which who knows what will happen. I guess if they have elections, there's always a chance that if everybody's agreeing with Lieberman, that the Netanyahu days may be numbered.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why we're talking about this is it's all tied up with, of course, the U.S., but also the president's son-in-law, Kushner, is involved in crafting this amazing peace plan that's going to succeed where all else has failed. But, you know, the ceasefire that started earlier this month, I think it was around the 6th of November, that was agreed to because of these, you know, months-long border skirmishes where I think about 170 Palestinians have been shot by the Israelis. And they've done things like send fire balloons over, and they burned up some Israeli farmland. So it was starting to look bad for the Israelis. They're shooting all of these, a lot of kids being shot, a lot of unarmed people being shot. It's turned into a real PR problem, plus they're losing farmland. So they agreed on around the 6th, let's have a ceasefire. Qatar wants to send some aid money to Gaza, which is a disaster. Let's let them send that aid money in there. Let's kind of calm it down. And then, lo and behold, as you point out, on Sunday night, a group of Israeli commandos went into Gaza, apparently to assassinate one of their leaders, and it was a botched raid. They were found out. The things blew up. Seven Palestinians were killed, one Israeli officer killed. And so ceasefire is gone, just like that. Yeah. Things look like they're going to heat up. Then the new ceasefire and the breakdown.
Yes, and it's sort of in limbo right now. Depends on what comes of this, whether they can renew it. The long term, it's going to be difficult to solve it without a true peace treaty between the two, and that's not as likely because even the Palestinians can't agree with each other because if you look at the West Bank and then you look at Gaza, they're not in agreement on what should be done. But I think the other thing that may have surprised some, maybe even the Israelis, the amount of firepower they had because when the Israeli raid occurred, it really, you know, the Palestinians had to do something. They didn't want to roll over.
Yeah.
So they had the people there to contend with their own people, say, hey, look, we have to strike back. And they actually launched 460 missiles, rockets, actually. And they weren't huge, but they were significant. And it was more than I think Israel expected. Now, Israel has, we see them as a very powerful force, and they are. are, and they have a lot of weaponry. But they also had trouble in Lebanon a couple years ago, and I think they always had to contend with that, you know. And if they had to handle something in Lebanon and Hezbollah, along with what's going on in Gaza, it could, you know, really expand. So all of a sudden, yeah, this stopped this. The hawks, though, I guess the Liebermans are the ones that are like our radical neocons in this country.
Hawkish,
you know,
yeah.
War, we need to wipe them out. And they are pretty strong. I mean, they're not bashful of saying what the real results are, but neither are our neocons bashful in trying to destroy individuals and countries. Of course, they've been running our foreign policy for the last 17 years, and they haven't won any wars yet.
Yeah.
All they do is spend money and prolong the agony.
Yeah, and it was, the escalation was sort of a measured escalation in a way. The Palestinians warned the Israelis, hey, we're going to blow up this bus. You got to get your people off of it. It's a military bus. So they hit it with a Cornet rocket, which was surprising in itself. Then the Israelis told the Palestinians, hey, we're going to blow up your TV station. You better get out of the building. They blew up their TV station. But as you point out, the Palestinians launched about 460 rockets. And, you know, we saw a good piece on Moon of Alabama that sort of lessons learned. And it appears that the Hamas fighters have learned some maneuver tactics and warfare and some things of this nature that may have surprised the Israelis a little bit, made it think like we need to really sit back down at the table. Let's not let this thing escalate further than it needs to. And as you point out, some of them really want it to escalate further.
But, you know, the way you describe it, I think it's pretty accurate. This was modified more so, but they were still demonstrating something. And, of course, afterwards, it was a PR contest, and Hamas said, "We're victorious. We won." They're calling for peace, and they were claiming, you know, some political and military advantages of this, and of course that will do well with their own people. It might, of course, that's probably what aggravated Lieberman. You know, he couldn't stand to hear that, but Netanyahu's in the position that he has to deal with a bigger picture than just saying kill them all and that'll solve the problem. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here in the next few days. Most likely, I think some type of a ceasefire will pass by. Egypt is involved. You know, they're the moderators between the two factions. So that might be a benefit, too.
And you mentioned the Lebanon war back. It was 12 years ago. The Israelis lost about 165, and the Lebanese lost, of course, 1,300, up to 1,300 people. But, you know, the Israelis, that was a big loss for them, and it was a real shock. It's a 34-day war. They were surprised that Hezbollah was so adept at fighting back. And I think they are rather risk-averse. They like the situations where they're shooting at unarmed Palestinians a little bit better than shooting at people that have some training. But I think some of the lessons learned is that there is a sort of a, as we talk about very often on the program, when there is a perception among a fighter that he or she is fighting for the homeland, there's a different kind of sense, and we saw it in Yemen, Afghanistan, Syria, etc. And I think that might be a bit of an advantage, even though on paper the Israeli army, of course, the Israeli army and air force is unbeatable in the region. But there are other factors in military conflict that are difficult to put your finger on.
Well, sometimes sorting out all the factions is difficult. Just think of how challenging it was and is to sort out all the different factions in Syria, who's fighting whom, and are we really on the side of Al-Qaeda, or are they our enemy, that sort of thing. But, you know, when it comes to the split of the Palestinians, which is a real split, because Abbas is not caring about, the Palestinians in Gaza. But the Saudis support them. The Saudis get along with Abbas, and mm-hmm. they'll give them support. But Gardar, they're the ones that will be more sympathetic, and of course they're considered more radical, I guess, and they will try to help. But Netanyahu, not a whole lot of aid, but he at least let some aid go in there. But that might be just the political international pressure going on. These people are get starved out, and it's just a horrible situation for them. So, but the Palestinians are split. But then the Arab nations are split too on this, and peace seems to be sacrificed with all the factions going on.
Well, a lot of this really dials back to interventionism in the first place, because you've pointed out when you were in Congress, and certainly it's well documented, that the Israelis helped start Hamas. You know, the Palestinian Authority, they viewed it as more of a threat because it was more of a broad-based movement, an Arab nationalist movement that included Christians as well as Muslims. And so they helped found Hamas, which is strictly Islamic, so they could have a better bad guy, a better target. And it's kind of backfired on them. And Hamas did the worst thing possible. They went and won an election, remember, back at, 10 or so years ago. And I remember when you were in the House, they were furious. How dare they win an election?
Well, they did this with Afghanistan, too. I mean, we identified or, at least associated, with Mujahideen and bin Laden. At the same time, when these radical schools in Saudi Arabia were set up, we support them. Our CIA helped support them. And that's where some of those radicals came from that finally hit us on 9/11. So, yes, I think they will use religion. They'll try to divide and conquer. And this is this can lead to a deadly position. And I think that's what we're facing.
And Moon of Alabama, I think, had also had a good sort of synopsis. There are sort of new military realities for Israel, which is undoubtedly the strongest military power in the Middle East. However, there are more subtle things. As they pointed out, they can no longer just march into Lebanon because Hezbollah is much more adept at fighting back, much better equipped than they were before. They can no longer bomb Syria at will because of the S-300s, which at the very least will make them pause before the next bombing run. They tried to sneak into Gaza and they got caught, so they botched that. And the Iron Dome, which was supposed to protect them against these rockets, by all accounts, underperformed, so they feel vulnerable. There's a sort of a new military reality, and I think that Netanyahu recognizes it's odd to think of him as a moderate, but looked at this new reality and realized it's time to tread a little more lightly in this case.
Now, one thing that wasn't mentioned in this as part of the discussion, but it's mentioned more in this country, and that has to do where our embassy is. And, we sort of challenged the status quo and moved the embassy, into Jerusalem. And I'm sure there must be pro and con factions in that, but it doesn't seem like that was really a big issue here. But maybe for some people it was an issue that they saw that as provocative, even from their viewpoint. Certainly in this country there are some people who feel like there it was provocative, but it was also very politically shrewd on our administration to do this because a large segment of his supporters, loved it.
Yeah, and I think that did start, that certainly added fuel to the fire that had been simmering. When he moved the embassy, it was really a signal to Palestinians, hey, this new administration is not your friend, you're not going to get what you want in it. And things have bubbled there, and I think probably up until the point where there was across these border skirmishes, this fighting that had gone on, I think that was fueled by this move. Certainly it indicated how deeply the Trump administration is willing to go to become involved in the crisis.
Well, one thing we haven't heard is whether or not the UN's going to get involved. You'd think there's a crisis and we need negotiations. Is the UN going to come in here and all of a sudden settle this? They helped start this thing, a long time ago, and by remaking and designing the Middle East. Of course, the designing of the Middle East, we talked about that on Veterans Day, about how the World War I afterwards, they drew all the lines, which led to a lot of problems. But of course, after 9/11, it gave the neocons the opportunity. We need to go in there and remake the Middle East. We're going to go in there and change these lines and draw them the way we should and make it right. They haven't been very successful at that. But I don't think that it's likely that people would pay a whole lot of attention right now with the UN coming in and saying that we'll have a new conference. I think we need maybe another Jimmy Carter.
Something like that, yeah. But, when we allude to with the title, the politics of the issue, and everyone was in favor of returning to the ceasefire on the Israeli defense side, from the Mossad, the Shin Bet, the IDF. But then all of a sudden, Lieberman, the defense minister, came out and said, no, I'm not in favor of it at all. In fact, I'm resigning because you did that. And that's what's thrown things into chaos, because his resignation, his party pulls out of the ruling coalition, and that means that the Israeli government really will fail, and they've said we need to have new elections. So that's really the crisis, so-called, in the Knesset right now.
Well, I don't know how we're going to get more involved. We're so engaged, but I do think it undermined any serious pretense, at least about bringing peace between Israel and the Palestinians. It's less likely to happen now for them to listen to us. They will always continue to talk about it. New administrations talk about it. People in Congress talk about it, but it's the same old stuff. And it seems like, and you mentioned at the very beginning, the people who have the moral high ground are the people who are defending their homeland. And that means that why don't we just let the people that live there deal with it? You know, draw a circle around there and say, hey, this is your homeland. You guys figure it out. Maybe, yeah. And if people would sort of follow that, and if we would stay out, which we have something to say about, just stay out of there and let it work out. If the other countries would do this, which you couldn't guarantee, I really believe if they were left up to it, because they've had these examples throughout history where the outsiders may have claimed control, but they kept their finger out of it. And yet, the different factions, actually there were times when Jews and Christians and Muslims got along together.
You remember that's what Taleb said when he was on our show a few months ago. If we had just stayed out of it, if all the elites had stayed out of it, they would have found a way. Trade would have been the key. Well, we've always thought of Netanyahu as kind of a radical, kind of a neocon extremist, but with a shakeup in Israel now, he may well prove to be the rabin of his era, the peacemaker, because the people that may follow him are by far more radical. And Naftali Bennett is the current education minister. He's demanding to be made foreign minister or defense minister, or he'll take the government down. He's from the Orthodox Nationalist Jewish Home Party. Really felt to be an extremist. A couple of quotes are enough to explain what he's all about. I'll do everything in my power to make sure Palestinians never get a state. The other thing you said that was very controversial, I've already killed lots of Arabs in my life. It's absolutely no problem with that. The other one would be the Lieberman, who leads a similar party but on the secular non-religious side, Nationalist Party, and he's called for disloyal Arabs should be beheaded. So these are some pretty tough guys. If the shakeup happens, I think it's going to be actually difficult for the Trump administration to deal with people like this if they do get in power and they go all out and start a war in the Middle East.
You know, I don't know how it'll work out either, but with Lieberman leaving and the radicals over there, you know, speak easily about killing people, maybe with them out of it, and it's just hope they don't put anybody worse in than Lieberman. But this may be a benefit to peace. It may be a benefit to Netanyahu. Maybe he will look and say, boy, you know, we can't rout them so easily anymore. So maybe we should be very sincere and come up with some type of a peace treaty that lasts longer than a week. But once again, this is a result of interventionism by a lot of people. We're not directly involved there, but I remember early in the 1980s, we were very much involved in Lebanon and had some Marines killed, and we sort of learned a lesson there. And Reagan even said he wished he had never gone in there because he didn't need to. I wish we would never go into a lot of places. We ought to just stay out of it and let people solve their own problems. The whole world would be much better off under those conditions. But we still have to promote the principles and the morality of striving for peace in order to have prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.